Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast 7.30 for the July 26, 2015 session from Ephesians 3, verses 14 through 21. Crazy Love. I'm David Cassidy, and today I'm joined by Nikki Hardiman, Daniel Glaze, and Bert Montgomery. Bert is going to get us started with a quick look at today's focal text. Bert?
This week we're talking about Paul's letter to Ephesians, specifically Ephesians 3, 14 through 21. And of course, authorship is probably not Paul, probably one of his close companions, but we'll just say Paul's letter. And I think it's always important to remember that Paul is writing to the Gentiles. The Gentiles are those outside of the Jewish faith. And we see in throughout from Acts on a tension between the believers in Jerusalem and the Gentile believers. And Paul is always a part of that, many times part of that tension, reclaiming and owning his Judaism and his Jewishness, but also putting limits on it and embracing and bringing in the outsiders. And here in the book of Ephesians, there's this central theme of the united church. Of all of us together, Jews and Gentiles. And I think it's part of the universality of the gospel that comes through in the letter, Paul's letter to Ephesians, the universality of Christ, that God is all-powerful and all-knowing and always reaching beyond our limited understandings of who's in, who's out. Paul's calling for this unity in Christ. And in this text that we have today, Ephesians 3, 14 through 21, it's a prayer, and it's a prayer for the Ephesians. And I just want to share, I love these few verses. I'm going to read from Eugene Peterson's Message translation, but these few verses from that, 17 through 20, the author says, as a prayer, I ask God that with both feet planted firmly in love, you'll be able to take in with all followers of Jesus the extravagant dimensions of Christ's love. Reach out and experience the breadth. Test its length. Plumb the depths. Rise to the heights. Live full lives, full in the fullness of God. And I love this, the way Peterson writes it. God can do anything, you know, far more than you could ever imagine or guess or request in your wildest dreams. And I just love that Paul has to remind people how big God is, because I think sometimes we forget that, and that includes God's love for us in Christ.
You know, Bert, I think that I, too, find it interesting that Paul is reminding this group how big God's love is, how incredible it is. And I wonder if we know that the book was probably written a little bit later. And so these people have been hanging out, waiting on Christ to return, because we know that in the early church, that was a really important piece, is that they would gather together and they believed Christ was coming back within their lifetime. And so I think that Paul is writing to these people, and I can imagine that if you've been waiting on this and you think that it's going to happen in your lifetime and you're getting close to the end of lifetime, that you may begin to doubt, or you may have questions about, was this right? Did we understand what the gospel writers were telling us, or did we understand the story as it was told to us by the apostles? I think that they were in an interesting time for the early church.
Well, Bert, I was especially struck by your emphasis and what you gleaned from the text, the sheer breadth of God's love and our inability to comprehend it. And I think most of us have had at one point in our lives or another a time when we found our love almost expanded incredibly in an almost immediate way. I think about, when children are born, We have this love expectantly for 9 months, and then but the minute they arrive, I mean, it's like something just changes, and that love just expands infinitely, and I think that gives us some, I think, small glimpse, you know, of the breadth and the massive ways in which God loves us and parents us throughout the centuries. I really appreciate your bringing up that part of the text.
Daniel, when you were saying that, it gave me this, I had this image flash of the Grinch, the cartoon Christmas story about the Grinch, when his heart at the end begins to start to beat, like it wasn't beating, and all of a sudden,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
like his heart grows inside of his chest. And that image came to me as you were talking about experiences of when all of a sudden we feel like we're capable of loving more than we knew we were capable mm-hmm. of loving.
Yeah. And I thought when you were talking, Daniel, tying back to what Nikki was saying, interesting about parenthood and God's love, because, you know, kids can be very impatient. And wondering when something's going to happen. Yeah, and when Nikki was talking about the early believers were expecting Jesus to come back, and he's not coming, when's this going to happen? And I thought you loved me kind of stuff, you know? So that kind of came across my mind, tying together what Nikki was saying with what you were saying.
Yeah, and listening, you know, this discussion about both the expansiveness of God's love and also the limits of our perspectives. I mean, if we're not careful, we it's so easy for us, I think, to fall into this sense that what we know and what we understand and what is common to us is all there is. I mean, for example, mm-hmm. if you've ever traveled internationally, especially that first time to travel internationally, and suddenly, you know, there's these new experiences of how people live,
right.
Their customs, the setting, everything. It changes your perspective. At least it did for me. It changed my perspective on how I understood the size of the world and the complexity of the world and the bigness even of the human race and the expressions and variety that's there. I'm also reminded, I don't know if you've seen them, but on some of the science programs, or I know there's some animations you can find on the web where they talk about the immensity of our universe and how hard it is for us to grasp how big it is. And so there's these cool animations that you can see that, you know, kind of show you zooming out from the Earth past the moon. And it's just incredible.
Yeah.
The amount of space and size, and it blows my mind. And so I, you know, I can't help but think, again, how limited our perspectives can be if we're not careful. And maybe what this passage is beginning to do is to beckon us to realize that just as the universe is this mind-boggling size, hard for us to wrap our heads around, that God's love is similar.
I love to go to the planetarium here in Macon with my kids, and I never go and see what they're doing there and walk out without feeling smaller or just more amazed at all that there is that I have no concept of. And I remember one time they were explaining that, I mean, I am not a scientist at all, but they explained that the way that we sit in our galaxy, because, you know, it's kind of flat and round, the stars that are on the side of us prevent us from even being able to see at all parts of a great vast part of the universe. Like, we only, even with all of our amazing instruments, are capable of seeing a certain perspective of the universe. There are areas that we can't even see because there's too much in the way. And that kind of makes me think about this. Paul is praying for these people, and he says, you know, I pray that you can know this amazing love, even though it's incomprehensible. You are really incapable of knowing what it is, and the completeness and the wholeness of it. But my prayer is that God, because God can do anything, that God will find a way to implant that awareness and knowledge and love in your heart, that you will know it.
It's really interesting that we've sort of taken this this path, I think, of I certainly, you know, when we started this podcast, I didn't think we would be speaking about the grandeur of God's creation being perhaps a way that we get a glimpse into God's heart. But you know, I think that may be a way that we can perhaps see a glimpse into God's heart. I mean, who among us hasn't had those experiences? David, you talked about traveling internationally, and what I thought you were going to say is an experience I've had, you know, flying to Europe and thinking, that's a lot of water. You know, you just keep flying, and there's just water after water, and I think, that's a lot of water. And I think it's incredible. You cannot comprehend it. It was just probably 2 years ago. So I had spent 35 years of my life on the earth, not having visited the Grand Canyon. And so my wife and I took a trip out west and took our girls. And of course, they were ready to get back in the car, but standing on the south rim, I just thought, you know, that verse from, is it Psalm 8? Who are mankind that you would love us? Who is human beings, Lord, that you would care for us? And I thought, you know, that's incredible love. The God who can fashion all of this cares for us and loves us. And if God loves us that much, gosh, surely it prompts us to try to share a little bit of that love with the person next to us.
Yeah, I love when you were talking about all the water when you're flying over, because I was thinking about God's love as an ocean. And, you know, when he talks about the length and the depth and the heights and the width of all of God's love, stand in the fullness of it. You know, imagine standing in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and you can't see land anywhere and you can't touch bottom and you can't, and you're just right there in the middle of it. I mean, that's sort of the image that I get of thinking of what Paul's talking about God's love and where we're supposed to be, to stand in it. It's just so overwhelming. One of my favorite hymns is "There's a Wideness in God's Mercy," and it fits perfectly with this. There's a wideness in God's mercy like the wideness of the sea, and there's a kindness of his justice which is more than liberty. And I love this: "For the love of God is broader than the measure of one's mind or our minds. The heart of the eternal is most wonderfully kind." But this goes back to the restrictions that we put on it. I think, Nikki, you talked about earlier, and that we have a hard time getting beyond our understandings. "We make his love too narrow by false limits of his own," by our own. I'm sorry. "We make his love too narrow by false limits of our own, and we magnify his strictness with a zeal he will not own." Again, that just to me echoes what Paul is trying to say about God's love.
When you were talking, that image you gave about standing in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, I thought in my head, yeah, they made a movie about that, and it was terrifying. The water, I don't remember what it was called, somebody found themselves in the middle of the ocean, and they had no life raft, no nothing, and they were there overnight. I don't remember the name of the movie. Does anybody? Well, it'll come to me eventually. But I remember seeing the trailer for it and thinking, oh no, like I can't go see that movie. That's terrifying. And I understand that. And I thought to myself, that is so overwhelming. Almost as soon as you were saying it yourself. And I think that's connects to the phrase, "We impose on God a strictness that he would never," what was the line? Strictness
that he will not own.
He will not own.
A zeal.
Zeal that he will not own. And I think that we probably do those things because that kind of love is overwhelming in a way that we don't know if we can take it in. And it's incredibly incontrollable. We are not able to control that kind of love. And I think that sometimes we do those things. We place boundaries on how we experience that love and how much we let in because to try to let it all in is a little bit maybe overwhelming, maybe scary. And maybe that's why we try to put some of those boundaries on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I know I've been guilty of that. You know, for me, at least it causes me to think about, you know, I can understand, and I can recognize God's call upon my own life to share love with all people. You know, in an abstract philosophical concept, I got it.
Sure.
But when it comes to, you know, to specific people in my life who can act rather unloving, that's when it gets very difficult. That's when I try to put those limits, that strictness, to echo Bert's hymn, that God just doesn't put on this. I recently was taking a plane trip, and I was traveling by myself, and when I walked down the aisle to catch my or to find my seat, I saw that I was seated next to a Muslim man, and you know, to be honest with you, the first thought that came to my mind was not, what a great opportunity to show love, to have great conversation, to maybe have an interfaith dialogue, to gain a new friend. The first thought, unconscious thought, that entered my mind was a nervousness sitting next to a Muslim man on the plane, and I'm embarrassed to admit that, but it just goes to show how far I think we have to go in imitating God's universal and all-encompassing love.
Yeah, and I wonder, and I don't, you know, we probably should get some of our psychologist friends on sometime. I wonder how much of that is due to our own ability. I think Nikki was kind of hinting at this, our own ability ourselves to accept love unconditionally and to accept that we are not able, because I think somehow we always think we're able to earn what we get. And even though we will be the first to admit we're full of faults, like Paul, I'm the greatest of all sinners, somehow I've still managed to earn the love and the grace that I'm receiving. And maybe that's a psychological trick, because we are convincing ourselves to like ourselves to some degree. And yet there seems to be a correlation between our ability to accept our weaknesses and to be open and honest about the darkness of our lives and our faults, the deepest faults that we even try to hide from ourselves, and the correlation to how we can expand grace to others, almost as if what Jesus says, if we're unable to forgive others, maybe we're unable to be forgiven. And maybe it's converse. If we're unable to be forgiven, it keeps us from forgiving others. If we're unable to be fully loved, it keeps us from fully loving others. And I think of I think in movies, obviously, as Nikki does, but I remember mine. I'm convinced by the grace of God that Breakfast at Tiffany's is a parable of Hosea and Gomer. Mm. Whether or not Truman Capote meant it that way or not, which I don't think he did, but the idea of Holly Golightly, and my mind went blank on the protagonist, the guy in the story who loves unconditionally, knows her past, and in the short story, she's openly a high-class prostitute. It's hinted at in the movie, never politely said. But he knows all of this, and he still loves her and is embracing her and saying, you don't have to do this, you don't have to do this. And somehow, she cannot break free from destroying the only great relationship that's there in search of more, you know, fly-by-night romance or something like that, that keeps destroying her, which is, of course, the story of Hosea and Gomer, and God's story with God and humanity. And I want to sit down with a Jungian psychologist, I guess, and try to figure out this Christian theology of our psychology that somehow we're doomed not to like ourselves, and it's going to somehow get into our relationships, hurt our relationships with others, and ultimately also block our relationship with God, our ability to fully receive God's love.
As you were talking, I was thinking about how in my work as a pastor, part of what I do is counseling with couples who are wanting to get married or maybe in difficult situations. And you know, among some of the saddest situations, but it's not at all rare, is when one person in a relationship has grown up in an environment where there was a lack of love, and inevitably that will create tension in a new relationship, because that person finds it so hard to give in to love, or to believe that there's love with no strings attached. It's a hard thing to give in to love, to allow ourselves to be loved, and I find that in human relationships all the time.
My hunch is we each have stories of our own, of places in our lives where someone has shown us an incredible or surprising level of love, and it's changed us in some ways. I don't know if we might want to share a few of those.
When I was a teenager, my mom had these pair of opal earrings that she loved. She loves wearing opals. And she lent them to me for an event where I had to get dressed up one night. And so I went to the event. And when I got home, I realized one of the earrings had fallen out of my ears. And these were special. She didn't own a lot of things that were that nice. And I, all night, I couldn't sleep all night. And I was devastated. I had no idea how to tell her. And so the next morning I finally just kind of had to fess up and go to her and return the one earring. And I could tell that she was sad. I mean, she was sad about having lost the earrings, but she just hugged me. And I knew that it was okay. She knew that I had felt terrible about it, but that has always stuck out to me, that even though I knew that I kind of hurt her by not paying attention, and even though it was an accident, she loved me, and it didn't change anything about our relationship, that our relationship was intact. And that has always really stuck out to me.
Yeah, my story, goes with my dad. When I was 12 years old, and I grew up in a very Christian and a very loving and supportive family, so I'm very fortunate. But in junior high, I got into some really dark rock and roll, and I got into some crowds at school that were not very healthy. And of course, I wasn't able to hang out with them outside of school because I was too young and didn't have a car and all that kind of stuff. But one of my favorite acts at the time, and this is in 1980, and I'm 12 years old, was Alice Cooper, who is now kind of, you know, a nice guy and everybody loves him and church people love him because he's an open Christian and all that stuff. But 1980, he was still pretty terrifying. And the people who went to his concerts and the things that went on at his concerts, let's just say 12-year-olds had no business being there. And I had all of his albums up to that point. I mean, you know, 7 or 8 albums up to that point, and I loved them. And my dad would not let me go. And I screamed and I yelled, and I had a friend in my class that was going, and I said I could go with him. And my dad would not let me go. And I yelled at him, and I said, "Dad, I hate you, and I never want to speak to you again." And I didn't talk to him, and I was very serious about it. I didn't talk to him for days. I avoided him for at least a week or so. He gave me space. He never hounded me. He never grabbed me. He never forced me to deal with him. He gave me space. I knew he was there. He would walk by, he would wave, he would smile, he would say hi, and then I would do whatever I had to do to ignore him or make a grunt or something, and then he would leave. But over a week's time or so, I got better at it, and I got better with it. And then as years went by, and then we got back together and loved, you know, because, of course, I'm living in the same house, and he was a great dad. But years later, I actually sat down with Dad, and I told him, I knew now that I had no business going to Alice Cooper, especially with the person I wanted to go with, because my life would have taken a dramatic turn for the worse. I know myself, and I know what I've gotten into. And I thanked him because, like God, he saw the bigger picture that I was unable to see. And he loved me by not letting me go, but he also loved me by giving me the space, the bigness to cry, to scream, to tell him I hate him, to tell him I'm never going to have anything to do with him again, without forcing me back into a relationship or feeling threatened by it. His love was big enough to say, I know you're young. I know you're impulsive. I know you want this. You'll understand maybe one day. He didn't say that directly, because I would have yelled at him, but and if it was started another fight. But he gave me that, knowing you're young, you're impulsive, you'll understand one day, and it will be okay. He never, and I asked for his forgiveness. He said, there's nothing to forgive. You know, there's nothing to forgive. You were just, and I think that's how God's love is with us. And we have a hard, like you said, we have a hard time with it. But that was one of my experiences of that, the greatness of God's love that just overwhelmed me through my father.
I'm grateful in my own life that I get to see acts of love toward me, and it happens especially this time of year. See, I pastor in a small town in northeastern North Carolina, where many folks around here keep bountiful gardens, and I'll come home from work one day, and there will be a sack of tomatoes. Or some delicious corn, still in the husk, still warm from the day's sun. Or there will be peaches that show up, and you know, at first I thought, well, gosh, you know, these folks think I can't take care of my family, or you know, I thought, well, I don't have anything to give them back, and then you know, it pretty soon you just have to give in and accept mm-hmm. the gift of love. And in this area and lots of parts of the South, we say I love you through produce and casseroles and things like that. An almost daily reminder that I am loved. And and it's a treasure to come home and see that on the back stoop.
Well I have a teenage story as well. I believe I was 16, and in the summertime, one of the ways I made money was mowing grass, and I had done it for several years, so I kind of had this collection of yards, and this summer, I had really scored because I had a cemetery, and, you know,
wow.
I mean, that's a lot of work, but boy, I mean, that was a big paying job, and it wasn't a huge cemetery, but, you know, that was cool, and so, you know, that was a big deal. Well, there was a funeral coming up. On the weekend, and they had called and said, hey, we really need you to come out and mow ahead of this because, you know, the service is going to be partially out there at graveside. And so anyway, Saturday rolls around. So I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it on Saturday. Saturday rolls around, and Dad comes in my room. I'm asleep. I'm a teenager, right? I'm asleep. And he's like, you're supposed to go out and mow the cemetery today, remember? It's like, yeah, I'll get to it. I've got time. And so a little while later, he came back, and he's like, you really need to get out there. They need that done today. And I was like, you know, Dad, it's mine. I'll deal with it. I'll get up in a little while. Well, I was laying there, and I heard the truck start up. And doggone it, I got up, and I was like, Mom, where's Dad? And she goes, oh, he's off gone to mow the cemetery. And so, you know, I was like, oh, mercy, you know. So I hopped in my car, you know, got dressed, everything, hopped in the car and ran off down there. And sure enough, he was out there mowing and going at it. And, you know, I was ashamed, and he didn't say anything. He just, you know, got in his truck and headed on back to the house, and I finished up. But, you know, it was a life lesson that, he didn't have to teach it that way, right? I mean, he could have let me have a natural consequence and just lost the business or had them yelling at me because it wasn't done in time. I mean, there are all kind of ways it could have happened and I still would have learned a lesson. But he took a costly approach. I mean, Dad was, he worked all week long and he was a minister of music at a church on the weekends. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Saturday was his only day off and there he was out there mowing a cemetery because I wouldn't get out of bed. Mm-hmm. So it was, that to me was a big act of love, but just because it was expensive to him.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. The idea of love for another, costing me something, doing something for someone else, even when I shouldn't have to do it, they should be able to pay for the price. They should have, we'd say, let them learn the lesson, let them whatever. But that's an interesting take on God's love for us, which is exactly what, the Christian story is, right?
Which is why I'm often uncomfortable with Christian expressions of standing up for something or for God or for their beliefs or rights. Mm. I'd be the first to say our religious freedom is important, but I think our call to be humble in the presence of others and to show our love in ways sometimes that is costly to us. That to me is a far more powerful witness and closer to, Bert, like you were saying, to the witness of Christ, who ultimately sacrificed all for us. Well, thank you all for another fascinating conversation this week around the gigantic nature of God's love. Maybe for each of us, we'll have opportunity to experience that in a unique way in the coming week. Thank you all for being with us, Daniel, Nikki, and Bert.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, David.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session at faithelement.net. Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.